Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They end up being there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what happened is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Thank you.
because I used to observe that a lot of little shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we moved, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you are driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their.
With these towers down, we need to take.
thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Point of order and shit.
Chair, recognize this theme, rep the Veronica Avenue boys.
All right, look. We done talked this shit to death, all right? When we gonna vote?
Rick, do you have a point?
All right, then. All those in favor of going together so we can get the best discount on New York package. Raise up.
So there's a lot going on with our timber supply. If you watched my video on our timber supply shortage and timber prices, you probably got the idea that there's a lot more going on right now with our timber shortage than just the coronavirus. The coronavirus definitely exacerbated an existing issue, but this issue is something that's been around longer than the coronavirus has, and it's something that we actually knew about going back into late 2019, and you know, legislators already started thinking of ways to try and avert a timber shortage. But ultimately, When it comes to the fundamental reason, if you watch that video, I get down to the fundamental reason of what's going on with our timber supply. The reality is that timber prices are going up, and they're going to stay up for the foreseeable future, which is going to impact the cost of new homes. That's also going to drive up the price of existing homes because people aren't going to be able to afford to buy brand new, so they're going to start buying more existing homes and fixing them up. Something that I've been trying to do is prepare my family and myself for a supply glut like this in timber. And the way that you do that is you figure out ways to create your own timber. So I wanted to talk to you guys about tools that you would need during a timber supply collapse. Timber is something that we use for more than just building homes. We use it for furniture. We use it for all sorts of projects around the ranch. We're always in need of timber. We always need lumber. So on the side of this building that I'm building, I've actually designed this to be kind of a lumber working area. So over here I'm going to have, you see these boxes on the side, those are mounting brackets for electrical boxes. So after I put on my siding, I'll have electrical outlets here. You'll see a 2x12 atop, that's a ledger board to mount another roof coming out the side of the building. That roof is going to run out a good 12, maybe even 16 feet, I haven't decided, feet away from the bay. And then I'm going to go ahead and have kind of an open side towards the house and towards our driveway, and then block it off where it faces the road. And this will give me kind of an area, a working area where I can work with any length of lumber, be under cover from the sun. I'll have areas under here where I can store and lock up equipment and saws. I've been looking at different products that have, saw tables on wheels so that everything is maneuverable and movable out here. And it gives me plenty of space because I'm working in the outdoors, but I have the covered area for it. On the other side of the building, I'm going to have a staging area where I can set up lumber that I create myself to dry out. And so this building here has a lot of function to it. It's not just a workshop. It's going to be kind of a small working mill to a certain extent, a place where I can create my own lumber, build things, and have the tools and resources to do it. So when it comes to actual chainsaw mills, you can get yourself into a very basic mill like this one for $20. This is a mill that I got off of Amazon, and I mean, it's a very inexpensive mill. You just set up a 2x4 or 2x6 going across the top of the board, and you put your chainsaw on there and cut down into the board, so you can cut boards off of a log fairly easy with this. I've read a lot of good reviews on it. I haven't used this myself. I'll be using it in the fall, but for a basic mill, and from what I've seen this mill can do, $20. Is a pretty awesome little device. So that is your basic, everybody should have one of these, a very, very basic mill. Now, my larger mill is called the Alaskan Chainsaw Mill. It's made by Granberg. And I love the way that this is set up. I got a chainsaw to use with this mill. When I got this set up, I specifically got this mill and the Husqvarna 460 Rancher. And this is the minimum sized chainsaw I would recommend for milling. And it's affordable because it's still kind of a consumer chainsaw. It gets a little bit into the professional range at the 460. The Rancher is designed for the individual who has a large amount.
All right. We had some mic problems here, but let's get to it. Let's see. All right, I don't know if you guys are still out there because, like I said, we have mic problems. And if you stay this long, you're a trooper. We got just a few minutes left. Anyway, I wanted to touch on this topic yesterday but got tied up. And then we have today, we have mic issues. But here it is now, so I can have it archived. We might have to edit this episode later. Today's podcast is titled One Pie, the Marie Callender Story. Once again, One Pie, the Marie Callender Story. And very inspirational story. In short, Marie Callender known for her pies and baked goods that she can get out of the frozen food section. She was living in a trailer park, and she took a pie, one pie, into a diner, and people had a slice, and well, that one pie got gobbled up pretty quick. So then she bought in four pies, and those sold quickly. Now, I'm paraphrasing and just skipping away. Her and her husband had a car. They sold the family car for $700, and she got a professional oven in her home. I guess she was still living in a trailer mobile home community. That's a better term, mobile home community. And she eventually was doing 200 pies a day. Later on, through her career, they opened up a restaurant, and things kept on getting better, and they were doing, 200,000 pies a day. Now, by this time, you know, other bigger partners or investors came in to the picture, or companies came into the picture. But it's just amazing. This lady, Marie Callender, she started off with just one pie. One pie. And then, of course, it didn't get that way overnight to go to 200,000 pies a day. But she started off with one pie, and she was living in a mobile home community. All right. Well, I wanted to get that out, so we got that archived. We're going to have to do a cleaner version of this show at a later date. Because I don't edit my programs. If anybody's got anything they want to put out there, call now. 619-768-2945. And let's see. Okay. Okay, while I'm looking for our outro music, let's go with some stuff here.
How'd it go? We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Yo, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised with you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
You ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you gonna do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
shit. See. B, he was a man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
All right, well, slow day today, I guess. All right, but I got plenty of other work to do. Anyway, but we'll get back into Marie Callender, her one pie story. She started off with just one pie and turned it into an empire. All right, on that note, we don't have everybody else calling in. So what we'll do, we'll wrap it up. Everyone have a good rest of the day.